EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Connor.
Ares 31, me neither.
Number 71, Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
Number 71, Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Something. A UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Emergency 295. Yeah, something just passed over us. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. So yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy?
Yeah.
Do we just call about the UFOs we thought?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same yeah. Airplanes.
Howdy dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. If you're a fan of the show and would like to help support the podcast by becoming a patron, head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast or hit the link below, where you can find out about the show and the rewards available to you. Plus, as an added bonus, every new patron gets a shout out on the show. Our guest tonight is Reverend James, and he comes to us from Arkansas. And he's going to be sharing his encounter he had in Rising Star, Texas, during the 1970s. An encounter he had with a mantis being wearing a black robe, a 4-foot owl, and a strange visit from the men in black. Welcome to the show, Reverend James.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on today, sir. Would you start at the beginning for our audience with your encounter in 1970, please?
Well, it's kind of short, but it's gotten along over time as well, but it began there in Central Texas, where I was born. It was my dad had worked up and down the Colorado River building dams and saving money to buy a ranch or a farm, which he did. And I was born during that time. From the looks of it, I was probably conceived on Valentine's Day, 1964. Pretty close to Dulce Air Force Base. And then my dad eventually moved to Central Texas and bought a small farm in a town called Rising Star, Texas. And so that's where I spent all of my childhood and part of my young adult life was there. So my dad, like I say, wanted to be a farmer, and he raised cutting horses and cattle and hogs eventually over time. But when I was young, he just had the cutting horses, you know. We lived a little tiny house at the end of a dirt road outside of a town of less than 1,000 people or so, you know. And they were having a party one night, which for them meant playing dominoes and drinking coffee and eating pineapple upside down cake. And I was 5 and being a nuisance. And, my mother wanted me to go to bed, and in the living room, on one side was the kitchen and the dining room, and the other side was a hallway that led to 3 bedrooms and a bathroom, and the master bedroom at the end of the hallway. Me being the youngest, I had the first bedroom, my brother had the second, my parents had the master bedroom. When my mom tried to put me in my bed, of course, there was too much noise, and I got right back up, and was back in the living room, so she took me to her bed at the very end of the hallway. She was trying to make me go to sleep and said, turn around and left. But I knew, being 5, and I knew the house better than they did, that I could go to the end of the hallway and crouch down and sneak behind a couch that was just immediately to the left side of that doorway and come out the other side and be right back in the dining room. And so I gave it probably about 10, 15 seconds, enough time that I thought my mom was gone, and slid down off the bed and was about to sneak down the hallway when I thought she came back. And because of a figure in the doorway, but she seemed to be wearing a hoodie. And I knew my mom didn't really wear hoodies. And it's like she just put a hoodie on and turned around and came right back. That is she trying to trick me? I'm busted. And then it stepped through the doorway. And that was the mantis in the black robe. And I had a primal fear that I can't really describe. I wanted to scream for my mother, but I couldn't make any sound come out. All I could do was back up. And I backed up onto the bed and kept backing away from the creatures. It moved in. It came in intentionally towards me, looking at me, coming straight at me. As I backed up to the back of the bed and pulled a sheet over my head, and it reached down and touched me on the temple, and I blacked out. And so me being a small child and thinking this was the Grim Reaper, I thought maybe death was after me and chasing me for about the next 10 years. And like I say, so probably about the time I was 14, I accepted the fact, okay, he's not coming back, but what is he and where does he exist? Which religion, whichever religion mentions this creature's got it right in my mind. And so I went on a quest for that, to find what religion or source that would mention this. I wouldn't find it again for probably 30 years later. It didn't turn up in Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, maybe the jinn in Islam, but they still don't describe it as this creature. But the Hopi Indians described an ant people. And as a matter of fact, Egyptians don't even, but the Hopi Indians describe an ant people that are very similar. And then eventually I would discover a Sumerian tablet that has a relief of what appears to be a human-sized leaf cutter addressing their king. And I thought, well, this is the only one. Whatever the Sumerians were doing, they knew this creature existed. And trying to research Sumerian history is sort of hard. If you've ever gave it a shot, that it might seem easy on the internet, but the actual tablets came from Babylon, or the huge treasure trove of tablets that have ever been confiscated by antiquity and by archaeologists were mostly located in the Baghdad Museum in Iraq for decades. So in the mid-90s, I knew, well, I'll never be able to see them. If there is an answer, they probably lay there. And the next time I ever saw anything about that museum was when American forces invaded Baghdad during the Iraq War with George W. Jr., not Pappy, not Senior, George W. Senior, but the second war after 9/11, that the day they invaded Baghdad, Al Jazeera TV had coverage of the troops kicking in the doors and smashing out the windows as people looted. I thought, well, I'll never, whatever answer I ever had, that's gone there. Well, it goes back, this brings it back to the 2008, the Stephenville, Texas UFO incident. If you research it enough, you'll discover that the object that the people saw and that the radar data that night from the Stephenville Airport showed the object floated over restricted airspace, which is Crawford Ranch. And that night, as a matter of fact, Junior, George W., was occupying the ranch. And it just seemed too much of a relationship by virtue of the fact that Junior is friends with a man named David Green that owns a company called Hobby Lobby here in the United States. They're giant hobby superstores, if you're not familiar with them. When David Green's made himself very wealthy with the Hobby Lobby brand, but 2014, he was forced to turn over tablets that he'd been buying from Iraq through, how would you put it, back during that time, America was occupied with fighting ISIS. If you remember that group that were had control of part of Syria, northwestern side of Iraq, I guess, and over old Babylon. Hobby Lobby had been busted by the Port Authority here in the United States, where they were buying those tablets. And they bought something like 1,400 or 1,500 tablets. They paid $300, or they told the Port Authority and Homeland Security after they were busted for buying these tablets. They had told them they estimated the value at $300 each. They didn't trust them, that they fined them $1.5 million, something like that, for buying illegal artifacts. They'd been warned by their lawyer that's what they were doing. And I have to mention, this man, David Green, is very obsessed with religion. He owns over 1 million Bibles. He actually owns a Bible museum located not very far from the U.S. Capitol. But he also collects anything about other religions as well. That he was doing the same thing I was doing, except he was a millionaire. He was trying to find out the truth himself. But so I believe it was, I'd have to look this up. I have the man's name saved. And, but I think it was Yale University that the Department of Homeland Security had found expert on Syrian or Assyrian history. And one of the only people that was could read cuneiform, Sumerian text, to value the 1,400 tablets. And they were all contracts and receipts. The term written in stone comes from the fact Sumerians would write a contract on a tablet, and once a tablet was baked, it was written in stone. And so we still use that term to this day, but that's he'd valued them all at about $1,200 to $1,500 a piece, but he came across three that he said were priceless. And these three tablets were how to call back the gods Enlil, Enki, and On. So the three tablets I was looking for that whole time, I just had confirmation that they existed. By virtue of a Port Authority bust. And the professor, the article I'm referring to, only appeared in the Yale newspaper about 2 or 3 months after. It never made any kind of mainstream news. But I may be taking this all too far, but the fact that what I saw in my room that night, I know what it was. I know that other people have discovered and have been abducted by the exact same creature. And then things like the Travis Walton story and Phoenix Light story. And there's just too many of them in that one region there between Arizona, New Mexico, across White Sands and through Central Texas, that whatever's going on, I don't have, can't put my finger on it. I'll tell you that, but There's definitely something going on. That's I'm Rh negative, O blood type. I had a photographic memory growing up, blonde headed and blue eyed. When I was born, I had white hair up until I was 4, and then when I came across a story of a girl, probably about 2014, anonymous person on Reddit, and she had sent me a link to a story of a guy who had the exact same creature in the exact same robe. And the robe the creature was wearing was bent to black. And when I had a woman share a story with me, it was a link to a church website. And it was one of their minister's stories where he had encountered a demon. And it was wearing the bent to black robe. It looked like a mantis. And it led him on his fight that demons are real. And then when she told her story, she was 9. It was the same creature, the same robe. She's blonde haired, blue eye, O negative, photographic memory. And that's when it hit me that, oh God, there are other people that had the exact same experience, craving salt. I was 10 to 12 years old. I'd buy a bag of chips. And here in America, they're Lay's and they're very salty. And I buy a bag of chips and crush them up and fill it with Tabasco sauce and eat it with a spoon. I'd pour salt on grapefruits, on bananas and avocados. And when I found out the same people had the encounter with the mantis in the black robe, or O negative, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, craved salt, photographic memory, it just, that's when it hit me with this existential crisis of what the fuck's going on. There's a relationship, but what? Probably about 1974, there in Rising Star, Texas, that about 9 o'clock at night, and I was about 9 years old, and my parents were visiting some people, some close friends of theirs, and my dad and this boy about a year older than me, his dad, were about to go into business together. So we'd been over there for several hours, and we were out playing in his yard. We were playing tag, as a matter of fact, and he was it. So I was trying to get away from him, you know, keep him, if you're familiar with the game tag, trying to keep him from tagging me. So I began to climb a tree. And as I did, I saw a red light in the sky, and it seemed to be rather large, like the size of a house or even a two-story house, and was just bright. And so I stopped, and he saw it too, and he stopped, and we climbed down from the tree. And what we saw was this giant red orb that seemed to be made out of plasma and just brilliant, just very brightly lit. And as we climbed down from the tree and started across the yard to get a better look at it, it seemed to move with us. And we'd been playing chase, like I said, so we're playing tag and chasing each other. And as we moved, it moved. And we ran back the other direction. It seemed to move with us. And we thought it was playing with us, like some kind of giant fairy firefly in the sky. And so we were getting a great big kick out of it. And when all of a sudden it just shot off all the way to the horizon, to the east of us is a tiny dot, and it came right back over us. Then it shot off at a 45 degree angle to the north, just straight off into space. And we were just flabbergasted by what was that. And immediately after that, we saw another light off to our right, towards the south of us, in the same easterly direction. And then followed by another light. And it was, they were white, sparkly lights that seemed to have red and blue and white lights dripping off of it. But the second light illuminated a small parachute of the first light. And then a third one illuminated the parachute of that and the belly of a large military aircraft flying by very low. And so we, being young kids, we became super excited about what we'd seen, wanted to run to the house to tell our parents. Once I'd realized I'd seen this large military aircraft, where it was located was about over where my dad owned his farm at. But as we ran up to the house to tell our parents, my dad and his dad were coming out of the house, didn't have time to listen to us because our neighbors had called and said that our horses had jumped the fence of their corral and were out in the highway. And so they had an emergency to go get the horses out of the highway. And it made complete sense to us at the time. Well, yeah, there's a giant military aircraft dropping flares flying over our farm right now. So, well, but of course, being little kids, you know, or we told our mothers, and they thought it was exciting, but didn't really believe us. And yeah, that's the imagination of children. My dad owned a farm. He had bought a combine and some grain trucks, and he used to have to hire a lot of illegal help. The labor was hard to come by. So he had taken me to the driver's license bureau and got a hardship license for me. And I was 14, and which means I get to drive 4 years earlier than most teenagers. You could get a license at 16 if you took driver's education course, or you could wait till you were 18 and just go take the test. Or my dad had applied for a hardship that he needed me as a driver, so I was given a driver's license. And my grandmother had a car that she rarely used, and I knew where the keys were at. And so there was a beer store probably about 30 miles away down dirt roads, and two friends of mine knew the teenagers, knew that route to the beer store. And there was an old man there that couldn't see. And so if he ID'd anybody, you couldn't read their driver's license anyway. So he would sell anybody beer. So these two friends of mine knew I had a license and access to a car, and were like, we've got some money if you'll take us, if you'll take us. And so I would later learn that that's what all the teenagers in my area did, was drive down dirt roads and drink beer and hang out and tell stories, you know. But this was my first experience, and they call it dirt roading here in the United States. It's where teenagers just haul ass down dirt roads in the middle of nowhere drinking beer, you know, to get away from society. So we'd made our first beer run, and it was on the way back, and probably about on our second beer, at the top of a huge hill. And it's got probably about a 70 degree slope for about 200 yards down the gravel road. And at the bottom of the gravel road, there's a T and the dirt road. And I need to make that to the left, and I need to make that turn. And I'm hauling ass. You know, it's my first time having a car without an adult in it. And got my friends, and we're drinking beer, just having a good ass time. And then this large object flew over the windshield as we're coming down the hill, laughing our ass off. An owl with about an 11-foot wingspan that covered the entire windshield crossed over the front of the car and landed right at the T in the road. And I slammed on the brakes. And like I say, this thing's 4 feet tall. Once it closed its wings, it's the size of a human midget standing there. And it's a freaking owl. It turned its head 180 degrees around and looked at us as we slid to a stop right before we hit it. Then it turned its head back around and flew off. Me and my friends just freaked out. What the hell was that? Everybody gets out of the car, and just one of the boys that was in the car that night went on to, as we were teenagers, 18, 19 years old, to join the Navy. And he went off the Navy and spent his whole career there. And just this about 6 months ago, he came to visit me and spent about 3 nights with me. And I asked him, do you remember the 4 foot tall owl with a wingspan wider than the frickin' car? And he said, yes, he remembered it completely. When I tried to inform him that, well, you know, there's no such thing as a 4 foot tall owl, he really wasn't interested and didn't want to hear it. But it confirmed, I remember it. This kid that I've known for 34 years ago, he remembered it. But what my take on it was that I was being judged. That was the first night I went on a beer run. Go do what typical teenagers do, start drinking beer. Start smoking cigarettes, you know, start partying. Otherwise, I don't know what to make of it. It was just if there was any missing time during that period, I wouldn't have any way of knowing. And I don't believe the other two guys would either at this point. It's been so long ago. But the synchronicity of owls, like you say, keep reappearing in these types of incidents that just put one more, you know, one more brick in the wall of tying it all together. When I made the wiki page and called it the best of UFOs, things got kind of weird then. I was familiar with the local state highway patrol. Their office isn't very far from where I live. The undercover highway patrol car pulled up and took a picture of me as I was coming home from work one day. And two other people witnessed it. The person in the car with me, his wife, I was working, the guy I worked with, his wife would drop him off in my house every morning and pick him up every evening. Because it took about 10, 15 miles off her trip. Then we're working in the same location anyway, same construction site. So they both saw it. And so either one or two things had happened. It was because I just created a Google Wiki page for UFO site that was really simple. You know, I gathered resources, YouTube videos, and a page about Roswell, New Mexico. It was really, really simple. Or it was because of the fact that my local senator, a young new senator named Tom Cotton, was angry with our President Obama deal he was making with Iran, and their foreign ministry, the Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Zarif, him and some other senators had gotten together and were writing a letter to Zarif, explaining to him that an American president was temporary, he could only be 4 or 8 years, and whatever deal Obama made with him. Well, I went off. I knew for a fact that Zarif is on Twitter. In Iran, Iran only has 1 or 2, 3 Twitter accounts. The general public doesn't, or didn't then anyway. And Zarif was who would speak on Twitter for the country of Iran. And anybody, I could ask him a question and he would answer it. It might take him 2 weeks, but he would reply to anybody. And so I'd gone off on Tom Cotton that you're an idiot. Yeah, you could talk to him right now. Just about 6 days later, the New York Post had a headline that Zarif and Cotton were in an argument on Twitter. And so that's, but my work buddies thought that's what got the State Highway Patrol. One of their jobs is to protect local senators. And so that could be what that's all about, to tell you the truth, to make sure that I wasn't some kind of threat, that because my local senator was too computer and internet illiterate to realize, you can go talk to Zarif right now. You don't have to write him a letter on snail mail or even email. You can do it publicly here. So that could be the cause of that. But I was instantly followed by a member from the NSA and a member from the National Security Council. And they wanted to share UFO videos and pictures with me. But one of the videos they shared with me on my Twitter account, my private Twitter account, to share on my UFO wiki was a rocket launch. And it was two men whispering in Russian, hiding in the reeds of a lake, watching the rocket launch. And another one was a picture of a Russian spy satellite on a trailer. And I just thought, this is very weird.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
So a couple of weeks after that, me and the same man that riding to work together, we go have breakfast together every morning at our first break. One day there's an elderly gentleman. I don't want to say elderly, he's gray-headed, but if you were an American, you'd be familiar with the fact that he was an obvious jarhead. He was a born and raised Marine, the thick neck, jarhead haircut. He's wearing a nice Boston Red Sox jacket, silk jacket, and he's sitting at the table right behind the one we eat breakfast at every morning. He just looks at us and smiles, and he's not eating anything, not drinking anything. He just sits there staring at us and smiles, and we have our breakfast and leave. And we come back the next day, and there the man is again, but today he's wearing a blue fleece jacket, but yes, some type of American logo on his jacket, and has an eagle on it. And so I get up and find an excuse to go get some napkins and get a closer look at him. And it's a Central Intelligence Agency logo is on his jacket. And so I say hello. And so I still don't know if this is about the Wiki UFO site I've created or the fact that I've just introduced my local senator to the country of Iran on Twitter, but I'm wanting to find out, you know. So I say hello to him, and he says hello back and starts to tell us about how we have a veterans cemetery located near us in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and we should be very proud of it because it's one of the oldest veterans cemeteries in the nation. He goes on to say that he has a lot to be buried at the veterans cemetery in Virginia, but has a 4-year waiting list, and that who would think you'd have to wait 4 years to die. And he went on to say there's also another historical site near you should check out. There's a Bible museum not far from you. And then he left, and that left me sort of puzzled. And so I checked into it and found out that a park called, I knew the park existed, but it's in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. It's called the Christ of the Ozarks, and they put on a passion play every Easter. Well, the park had gone bankrupt and had been purchased by the State of Israel. And then I went on to find out that one of the largest gospel recording studios and producing facilities is located in a little tiny town in Oklahoma. And it also belongs to the country of Israel. And so I didn't know what to make of that relationship. That why would this guy show up to tell me? Is he trying to get me off the subject of UFOs? And if you know where I'm going from here, is America been taken over by Israel? And how deep is the propaganda? And I don't want to get political, but was this guy just trying to change my focus of what I was doing? Or it was just a very odd incident, if you know what I'm saying. It is very odd. Like I say, I don't have the answers to what's going on. I just know I have some pieces of the puzzle, or I'm absolutely crazy. But either way, I'm happy with, if you know what I'm saying. A younger, heavyset woman used to live straight across the street from me and my family. And but a younger woman, and then a woman moved in next door to her that was about our age. My wife became friends with her. Well, the younger woman had moved out, and about 6 weeks later, the woman we became friends with came over one night and told us that the woman next door, before she'd moved out, had told her that we were very weird people. And she was scared of us, and she asked her why. And she said, But she stayed up watching movies to about 2 a.m. one night, and she went outside to have a cigarette. And it looked like we were having a disco show in our house, that there were what seemed to be laser beams of colored light shooting out randomly, like a disco, like some kind of professional laser disco show going on in our house. And we have blinds and curtains on every window. We go to bed about 8:30 or 9. I don't even own a laser pointer. I do have a granddaughter that has some toys that have LED lights on them. But the woman had told her that the lights were just shooting out in these bright rays in every direction and spinning around. And an orange light had swept by and stopped and focused on her face. And it caused her to panic. It just stayed there, focused on her face. And so she got up and ran back into her house and was scared to death. And I guarantee you, there was no sound. There was no, she thought we were having a disco party over here, but there was no music coming out. And I can guarantee you, we weren't having a disco party. So whatever that means, I don't know. But shortly after the time, an undercover state trooper pulled up and took my picture. We were moving about 2 months later. My wife was in the garage with the door open. She was using a large table in the garage to pack things. And we were moving because the place we were renting was for sale, and there was a for sale sign in the yard, and it had sold. And the people that bought it wanted to move in there. And so it said sold on the for sale sign, but while my wife was in the garage packing, older black car pulled up in front of the house. Two men in black fedoras and black suits, typical men in black, get out and come walking up to her. And she assumes they're Jehovah's Witnesses. Here in America, in this part of America, we have a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses that come around and try to witness to people, but shades or black jackets. But these two gentlemen were. And as she looked at them, she believed them to be me and my brother, but about 25 years younger. And that morning, before I went to work, I was fascinated with the photo, how high definition photo, the moon Io. And that's an image I had opened up on my screen. And was showing a, when my coworker showed up to ride to work with me, he came in, we had a cup of coffee, and I was showing him a photo about all the detail. And the Io has these green spots and black spots, and you can see these flows on it. And the image was just incredible. But when these two gentlemen walked in, my wife had a breakdown because she thought it was me and my brother that it came back from 25 years ago, and it messed with her psychologically enough that she had a breakdown and started tearing up. The two gentlemen asked her if we had a room for rent, and she said, no, we're moving. And they asked her, do you mind if we look around? And she said, help yourself. The two men walked in the living room and stopped and were fascinated with the photo of Io, and looked at each other. And they looked around at paintings and pictures that I had on the wall. I paint, painting goes on my family, so a lot of the paintings were paintings we had done. And then they left. And my wife's not really into this subject, and she knows I do it as a hobby, but she's not, doesn't really care about it. And she was absolutely hysterical when I got home that I need to stop. I need to take down the wiki page. It just sort of blew her away. And personally, I've never had an encounter with a man in black, and I didn't expect my wife to ever to either. She doesn't have any abduction stories. No, she's never seen anything in the sky. She's never... I've seen, starting about 2012, I guess, or no, probably closer to 2014, I decided if these things exist and they're still out there. And so I set my alarm at 4 o'clock every morning, got up, made a pot of coffee, a cup of coffee, and go outside. Spend 30, 45 minutes staring at the sky, drinking coffee and having a fag. The first thing I saw was a white light going by. So I went and looked it up and found out it was a satellite and another satellite. I saw a beautiful meteorite coming in. There's a green fireball, leaving a green vapor trail behind it. And then it exploded like a camera flash that was blinding. And it was gorgeous, but I knew that was a meteorite. And after about 6 months, the satellite that I was witnessing going from south to north was now going from north to south. And then one morning, there had been a thunderstorm earlier that night, and there was just a few scattered clouds. And I watched a white orb, which it was traveling from the direction of an airport where regular traffic would be. So I just assumed it's a plane taking off with its landing lights on, which would be normal, totally going in that direction, that altitude. They climbed up into the clouds. It stopped and it dropped down beneath the clouds. It was just a white glowing orb that sat there beneath the clouds for about half a second and shot off towards the south. And so I was satisfied, okay, they do still exist. They're still up there. And then so about 4 years later, which was about a year ago, I just happened to be loading my truck. I still get up at 4 a.m. I have to leave about between 5 and 6 a.m. And I saw another one do pretty much the same thing. Just this white orb traveling across the sky. At the altitude of like 36,000 feet, I would guess, a passenger plane. So, okay, maybe this could be the sun over the horizon striking the passenger plane, except it stopped, dropped a good 10, 20,000 feet, and then shot off in a different direction, and then turned into a red orb. And so I don't really look for them anymore.
I really appreciate you coming on today and taking your time out and sharing your story with the listeners today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this. Thank you, Nick.